other people don't have your answers. You have your answers. It's really you that needs to decide what's best for you.
What would you do all over again and why? I'm Natalie Carpenter, women's health and fertility advocate, doc connector, and former corporate brand warrior. Each week, join me in candid conversation with an inspiring public figure who boldly shares their real-life stories of adversity, impact, and what they did next, and if they would do it all over again, knowing what they know now. Welcome to the All Over Again podcast. Karen Johnson is on a mission to address women's health more holistically and encourage more proactive conversation around reproductive wellness. Karen Johnson is the co-founder and CEO of Bond, an innovative line of supplements reimagining hormone and reproductive health, all inspired by her experience with her autoimmune fertility and her journey to bring her two children into the world. Listen in to what Karen would do all over again. Hi, Karen. Welcome to All Over Again podcast. I'm so glad you're here.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've already started the conversation, so I needed to stop our pre-conversation so that we could get the conversation started here so that everyone could listen in.
The pre-show was definitely strong today.
It was strong, and so therefore our show is going to be even stronger. I'm setting the bar super high.
There you go.
So, Karen, let's dive right in. What would you do all over again and why?
What I would do all over again without question is go through the process of having my son here and getting pregnant and giving birth to him, not just because he's incredible and one of the most amazing humans that I'll ever meet in this lifetime. I mean, I'm his mother. I have to say that, right? But he is. But not just because of that, because it was a really arduous journey for me and one where I developed a knowledge of infertility to the depths of it being related to my immune system, which opened so many doors and really just set me on my life path overall. So that's really what I'm here to talk about doing all over again.
So tell me a little bit about what that journey looked like for you. And when you say that you had some immune-related challenges, what exactly do you mean?
Starting at the beginning, my husband and I got married and wanted to try to conceive right away. We're just the kind of people who've always wanted to build our family, have kids in the house, et cetera. It all started for me with just the inability to be able to get pregnant or even really get a positive pregnancy test at all. I've never been pregnant naturally. So the journey started there with a year of trying, no results, no answers, and moving into reproductive endocrinology and trying different IUIs. Again, no results and no positive pregnancy tests with four rounds of IUIs. And then moving into IVF, which is where I developed the knowledge that something deeper was really going on in my system beyond what was happening with my reproductive organs, which by that point I knew were functioning normally, so to say.
Was there a discovery about some immunocompromisation at that point?
What ended up happening was I went to an IVF doctor and started having early miscarriages. So we went through the egg retrieval. In that process, again, everything went really easy for me. I had over 30 eggs pulled out in one retrieval, which is almost too many. But yeah, nothing turned up wrong with my reproductive health and processes. So we were all really excited to start doing implantations because we just couldn't find any answers or questions as to why I wasn't getting pregnant. And then after the first round of IVF, what happened was I did test positive and when I went in to get my blood work done, my HCG was only 11. And when your HCG is below 25 at 2 weeks post-transfer, it's basically considered a non-viable pregnancy, whether, you know, it's a chemical or, you know, et cetera. It was a very low HCG number, and they told me that my body probably only was pregnant for a few hours long, which was an odd kind of conversation to have, because watching the process and just seeing everything kind of unfold as it was supposed to with no pregnancy, and then hearing that my body only stayed pregnant for a couple of hours was just odd to me, that that was a scenario that was even discussed. And it wasn't really one that I was willing to accept because I couldn't understand it. And that's where I really started digging deeper outside of the fertility clinic and doing research on my own.
So where did the research lead you? And it sounds like you may have had to become your own advocate to really get the answers that you needed, right? Because this was not like something that you just said, okay, here, what can we do next? It sounds like you took charge. So tell me a little bit about your advocacy.
Yeah, so at that time, I was also having digestive issues. I was in a high-stress work environment, so I knew my cortisol was high, but I was also having digestive issues. So I would wake up around 4 or 5 a.m. with stabbing pains in my stomach, which initially I thought was hunger pains. They mimic, the feeling mimics that. But I started seeking a naturopath to help me with some of my digestive issues. We did a panel of food sensitivity, and it came back that I had over 50 different food sensitivities. I shouldn't be eating gluten, total celiac, all of these different components, where at that point, I knew that something within my body's systems wasn't working properly, but that it didn't necessarily happen within my uterus. I went out and bought a book that I found on the internet, which this was 2017. Amazon wasn't selling it. So I had to find a guy to sell it to me, 700-page book called Is My Body Baby Friendly? And this book is written by Dr. Alan Beer, who is now deceased, but goes through how the immune system and the digestive system work hand in hand with reproduction in order for pregnancy to occur. And at that point, I realized that my immune system was, by some regard or another, out of whack, and it was causing the issues in my ability to be able to conceive.
So that opened up, I'm sure, a whole new chapter for you. So once you realized you made that connection, did you take the information back to your doctor? What did you do to actually start putting something in place to help you?
I took the information back to my doctor, my reproductive endocrinologist, or the doctor that was doing my IVFs. And they said, you don't need to worry about things like this. All of this science is new age. And since you haven't had multiple losses, like, why even consider it? That's the saddest part I feel about what still happens with women in their doctor's offices. But at that point, I knew that I needed to have expertise beyond just the reproductive endocrinologist. And what you see with some doctors in their field is that they specialize so much in the one area that it's almost hard for them to understand how a different component or area of medicine might interact. Anyway, I read the full book front to back, and at the end of it is an appendix with other doctors that are practicing what is reproductive immunology. And one of those doctors, Dr. Joanne Kwok Kim, ended up being 40 minutes from my house out in the Chicago suburbs. So I pursued her to support me on top of the reproductive endocrinologist so that I had a layer of reproductive immunology on top of just the doctors that were looking at my reproductive systems. And that's what ultimately ended up helping me to get pregnant, sustain a pregnancy, and have my son here.
It's incredible that you had to do your own research, which we should all do in any regard in our lives, right? We should always do our own research. But it's important that you found your voice and you advocated for yourself to say something is not right and there's more to this. And I've been there with you. I've been there when a doctor has said, no, your crazy acupuncture doesn't work. Okay, if it makes you feel better, sure. Your diet doesn't matter. Oh, my favorite was, oh, don't worry about being stressed. People have babies all the time in war-torn countries. By the way, that is like the worst thing that you can say ever to someone. Like, why would you say that? That's horrible. It minimizes everyone's experience. By the way, I mean, I could go on and on. There are so many things that I wish, to your point, that a doctor would just say, this is my lane. This is my area of expertise. I'm not as familiar with nutrition. I'm not as familiar with that, but I know someone who is, and this is who I partner with, and this is who I recommend that you talk to, or here's some resources. I had multiple doctors over time. By the time I got to CCRM, which is ultimately where I conceived, I had an experience where I felt like I had a partnership. So I hear you. Setting up your dream team is really important. It sounds like you kind of had to put everything together to make that work for you. And our voice is so incredibly important. So how did your infertility experience affect your personal and professional life? I mean, we talked a little bit about the process, but how did it affect you personally? And how did that play out professionally?
I think the first like big effect you feel from infertility is when you kind of have that eye-opening moment of, am I ever going to become a parent or not? And your world as you knew it shifts into this new world where it might not be the world that you were hoping for in your future. So I feel like that was really where my heart started to fall a bit in the process. Like, am I ever going to be able to become a mom? Like, what will happen to my marriage if I'm not a mom? What will my future be if I'm not raising kids? Like, what is this world I haven't planned for because I've always wanted it this specific way? Just coming to terms with the fact that infertility is like locking yourself into a piece of time that does not move is something that is so hard to survive, but also to overcome, right? Because for years, I mean, I suffered from infertility for many, many years. And you know, our lives were essentially on hold. Our vacations were on hold. What we saw for our futures was unclear. And you just feel like you're stuck in this world where everyone gets to keep moving but you. And I don't know. I just hope that talking about some of these things or feelings helps other people that might be in these positions hear another voice on them, because it's just so sad and isolating. And then, you know, you get into the layers of trauma, which are really for me the losses, which we haven't talked about yet, but losing a child and losing babies during gestation like I did, which were the result of my own immune system, was traumatic and overwhelming to a point of almost being taken over by it, because you feel that your body is the one letting these babies down, and you know that the babies are genetically okay. The babies would be perfectly great and in a fully formed place if they were in a body or a vessel that wasn't immunologically compromised.
That's so hard. I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. My heart goes out to you. When you think about the trauma, is it something that you can now manage? Like, do you know that it wasn't your fault?
Well, now I feel differently because I feel that personally I had to go through these deep, deep levels of it so that I could help people in the future from having to do that. So I feel like a lot of what I went through was with purpose, which helps you on the other side of it. So the one major, major loss that I had was at 13 weeks gestation. My baby was healthy and We had just passed like all of the genetic check-ins and she was growing great. But my body, what happens when you are autoimmune compromised and you don't treat it, not only trying to get pregnant, but during the pregnancy, is your immune system can kind of take over. And my immune system actually broke my water and put me into labor with a healthy growing baby. So all that to say, I feel okay right now because I'm a spiritual person. I have a strong belief in God, but I also feel like I know this soul that was supposed to be my daughter, and I've worked through it that she holds no judgment towards me.
Were you always spiritual, or did this process guide you into that space?
I've always been religious. I've always had a really strong belief in God, but when I started with the infertility, down the path of infertility, I started meditating. That opened me up in a really nice way and allowed me to connect in a way that I never thought would be possible, and that most people would look at me and say, like, did you really? But there were meditation sessions where I could feel and see like my son sitting behind me. Like, I knew he was coming. Like, I just was able to get this sense of peace through almost connecting with my subconscious on that level. So that's really what I turned to.
And you have two children?
I do.
So is your son the eldest or the youngest?
So my son Elijah is 5. He's in kindergarten. And then Ruthie is almost 3.
Ah, okay. It's beautiful. Do they get along? I have to ask.
They do, yeah. The age gap is great. The 3-year age gap, I mean, I really wanted them to be closer, but you know, when you're with infertility and you can't just pick and choose. So, but I love it. He's a sweet older brother and they play together now.
So during the infertility journey, the highs are high and the lows are clearly devastating. What were those experiences for you?
So I think we should go back a bit to right when I got accepted into the reproductive immunology clinic. So when I found Dr. Joanne Kwok Kim, and this is going to be a long-winded way to answer your question, but when I found her, I immediately called over to get on a wait list, and they said that she was working 6 months out. So at that point, I wasn't really sure. I hadn't spoken to a doctor or an expert on reproductive immunology yet, so I wasn't sure exactly what my issues were and what I should believe or not believe. So I decided to continue with another round of IVF while I was waiting to get into the clinic. What ended up happening was it was around Thanksgiving and they had cancellations. So they called me into the clinic 2 weeks before the implantation. I got a random appointment out of the blue and they did all of this blood work on me. I told them that I was already planning for the implantation. We were planning for 2 embryos to try, a boy and a girl. Anyway, they called me back 48 hours later and they said, you should not go through with the implantation. We got initial blood work back and your anti-nuclear antibodies, or the antibodies in your blood, are to such a level that we can't even chart them, meaning that your pregnancy will result most likely in a miscarriage because your immune system will take it over. And that's when I really felt a lot of the lows and having to understand that everything I was reading in a book was actually true, and that I had a very compromised immune system, but a silently compromised immune system, meaning that on a day-to-day basis, I walk around on the streets, the healthiest looking person you'll walk by. But what happens is that when you go and get pregnant and you carry these underlying suppressed issues, your body goes through so many changes in order to accept that pregnancy that your body just like it's driving against a wall and it can't modulate for your body to accept it. And your body treats the embryo or the baby as foreign. So a lot of the protocol and a lot of the medicine that you go on for an autoimmune protocol is similar to that of a transplant patient. If you were getting a new liver or new heart, because the issue is that your body is not modulating to accept a pregnancy or to keep a pregnancy. So anyway, back to the story. I found out all of this. They encouraged me to cancel the IVF. I said, I'm already hopped up on all of these hormones because you have to do at least, 4 weeks of injections before you can do the implant. So I said, you know, this is last call. If something really goes wrong here, I'll know I need to switch over to your protocol. They said, okay, we're going to start you on these medicines and you need to start washing your blood with a treatment called IVIG, which essentially it's a blood infusion. So it's not a transfusion, but it's an infusion of part of your blood cells coming back into your system so that those antibodies stay dormant. So I started getting these infusions, which, dang, another low, right? Like going in and feeling like you're going to get a blood transfusion like 24 hours before getting pregnant was super scary. It's really not, you know, it's similar to getting a blood draw. Once you do it a few times, you get the hang of it. But I started doing these treatments. I ended up getting pregnant, testing positive right away. Super bright, positive pregnancy test. So they increased my immune protocol at that clinic. And around 6 weeks, we found out it was twins and that both the boy and the girl had stuck. Was just so excited. It was Thanksgiving. So my parents had flown in to spend Thanksgiving with us. And we told them they were going to be grandparents. It was just, you know, the moment you wait for, like they don't have any other they didn't at that time have any other grandkids. So this was their first, but we were all so excited. And the next day, my mom and I went to an ultrasound appointment together because I wanted her to come and experience like seeing an ultrasound and seeing the little babies. And I was 7 weeks then. We went to the ultrasound and at that appointment, they told me that the girl's heart had declined already and that the girl wasn't going to make it, most likely, that by my next appointment. And I was doing ultrasounds and IVIG every week, so I was in this clinic every week. But they said, by the next appointment, she won't have a heart rate and your body will either absorb her or you'll miscarry out both of the babies. That is like probably the lowest moment of my entire life, because the other thing I really felt with infertility too was I really wanted to isolate my pain from my family, and like just knowing that like my mom was in the room and seeing her excitement from the day before to that day and feeling like I contributed to that sadness in her too, like that's just, it was just so sad. I was put on bed rest. I didn't go to the Thanksgiving dinner with my parents that were in town. I ate canned beans on my back. I was so scared to even get up and go to the bathroom. And by the next week, her heart had stopped. And what ended up happening was what is vanishing twin syndrome. So my body did absorb her and didn't end up taking my son out with her. But I had to live through the rest of the pregnancy kind of with that worry as well, which another low, right? But my son was born, although traumatically, he was born at 35 weeks and he's 5 now. So all good things come from hard situations and he's here with us now and just such a miracle and joy. But man, was that, you know, the ride of my life.
I can hear so much gratitude in your voice when you speak about your son. Of course, like he's a miracle. He's a living, breathing, walking miracle. It's incredible and beautiful. And so while you're going through all of this internal, personal hardship in this process, what's happening professionally? Like, how are you showing up at work? Are you able to show up at work?
Best years of my career. I don't even know how I did it. Professionally, at that point, everything was going really, really well. we were just continuing to pour energy and opportunity into the company. And it really allowed my head to be on something that wasn't so traumatic and hard, which on the other end, of course, I was dealing with. I also, and this was pre-COVID, you know, where we were going into an office every single day. And if people weren't there, everyone was like, where are you? You know, not like today. So I was balancing going into an office every day or working from my clinic because these infusions are pretty much a full day, so 4 to 6 hours, and then you get kind of wiped out from them. So yeah, I was either working from the places that I was being treated at or the office. And oh, the other thing too is that I was just so fearful in my pregnancy that I hit it. So I didn't tell my boss until I was 20 weeks, and no one at my company knew until 25 weeks, which at 25 weeks, you're pretty big. So I was wearing like a lot of like Afghan style sweaters, but I was just so mentally unable to talk about it because I felt like if I talked about it, something bad might happen. And then I will have talked about it and I would have to go back to all those people and tell them something bad had happened. And again, I didn't want people to wear my sadness. I had just seen like the sadness, you know, with my mom and my family and my husband. And I just didn't want to have to tell people about the twin and that there were two babies and now there is one. And anyway, so it was a hush-hush. I never wanted a baby shower or to even discuss the pregnancy, to set up a nursery. And then I ended up going into labor at 35 weeks. So one of the symptoms of having an autoimmune issue during pregnancy is that you're more likely to have a broken bag, and that's because of your immunological response. So in both of my cases, my water broke, but my water broke at 35 weeks, and they had all of the NICU doctors lined up for him because it was so early, but he came out 7 pounds, 5 ounces, not a second in the NICU, and ready to go.
Big kid, 35 weeks, 7 pounds. My daughter was 7 pounds at full term. There's so much that you just shared that I can directly relate to, the waiting to tell everyone at work. But by the way, I kept it all a secret from work. I didn't tell anybody that I was going through it outside of my boss eventually. And that was because at that point, I think I was moving on to IVF number 3 and I had to travel to Colorado. So that was the reason. I mean, I literally had to travel and again, was expected to be in the office a lot. So same. And in that time frame, you kind of think about like, okay, he now knows. Okay, there's one person that knows. But even then when the pregnancy happened, I too waited till 20 weeks. So I hear you. And then I didn't want to tell anybody else, right? So all of these things, these fears, you're always waiting. I think that infertility and IVF and any kind of loss makes you think, when's the other shoe going to drop? And I'm hearing that was a recurring theme for you. So when you got to those years where I was in IVF, I overcompensated at work because that was something that I knew I could do really well because the other part felt like I was personally failing. So all of what you're sharing to me sounds so relatable. When you move on to your second pregnancy and you get there, how was that experience? At that point, did you carry with you a lot of the same traumas? Were you able to sort of, had you worked through them? Like, what was that second experience like after having had the first?
So I should clarify that Ruthie was born via a surrogate. I didn't carry her naturally, which it's a full other discussion, I feel, because there are so many interesting things to talk about with surrogacy. But basically, after Elijah was when I had that really bad loss at 13 weeks, where my body just went into labor. And at that point, the company we had sold, and I just really felt like for my mental health that not being in that situation for myself would be the best situation for our family to expand. And I sought surrogacy.
Amazing. What is your takeaway about surrogacy?
Surrogacy is a beautiful, beautiful thing. I always encourage people to look at it like that instead of an interaction or an exchange of services. Our surrogate for Ruthie is someone I would consider a sister for the rest of my life. And I love that her heart did it for the right reasons. And it ended up being a wonderful experience for me because I was disconnected from the pregnancy being in my body. So my mental health was able to recover and bounce back. And when my daughter was born and when surrogate babies are born, you know, there's hardship to it too. Like they don't really know who you are. So they have to get used to a new maternal figure. But you, on the other hand, forget that you didn't carry that baby. So now that she's 2.5, she's one of us and a member of our family, just like my son. And I'm happy that I was able to do that, to have her here.
And you mentioned that you're still in touch with the surrogate and that the kids have a relationship with your surrogate. Ruthie in particular, does Ruthie know her story? Have you started telling her about her story, or will you?
So she saw Ashley in October, and it's an obvious conversation, you know. So first of all, yes, she knows, but she's too young to really comprehend what it means. Elijah knows the whole situation and will say more than probably any of us. Like, I grew in mom's belly, but you grew in Ashley's. Or we'll joke that, like, she is born in Iowa because, you know, that the babies are born where the surrogate lives. So yeah, but, you know, the photos are in her baby book of Ashley and I and Ruthie in matching outfits the day she was born. This is definitely her story and one that I wouldn't want to change, you know, even if I felt like I wanted to protect her, but just to help her and the generation of people that are going to be with her understand that families are built differently, right? And there's no shame or sadness or negativity that has to be discussed along those lines.
There are so many ways and paths to parenthood. And it's incredible that we live in a time when we can actually explore different options on that path. One of the things that we talked about in the pre-show was control, right? And how when we went through our journeys, so to speak, that we found different ways in which we could control the sea of uncontrollables that were happening with infertility, the IVF process, and quite frankly, what was happening in our bodies. Was there ever one point where you thought, okay, I need to do this because I need to somehow have some sort of measurable control? Were you aware of the control and actively seeking the control?
I don't think I was aware in the moment. I feel like what I was aware of in the moment was about 10% of like the reflection I can give back to all of the highs and lows of infertility and everything that went on. But overall, I feel like what ended up happening was I got to Vital Proteins and I had grown up previously in fashion and beauty, so working in more of those spaces. And I was immersed into this world of wellness. And in 2016, when Vital Proteins really started out, it was because people understood collagen as essential for bone broth. That's really where it started getting its notoriety. And the people that, and the community of people that are cooking bones to make bone broth to get collagen from that are so health conscious, but in an almost primal way, right? So I learned a lot from this new community I was in, my coworkers, my boss, these consumers and people that I was talking to every day about the product. And I learned a lot about nutrition, health, and how we can support our bodies by putting better things into them. And that really led to a lot of what has been on my path, which ultimately has been the founding of Bond, which is my supplement brand for hormones and reproductive health. But it really taught me about what different things can do to support your body. And I started digging into different layers of research on not only what the diet should be, but what we should be supplementing with on top of our diets in order to support our reproductive systems. This, mixed with everything I was learning about my immune system, really got me into the place of understanding that the body is compromised of many systems, which need to be functioning together in order for our bodies or our female bodies to carry a pregnancy. And we can support those different systems and interactions with a variety of different things, of different types of exercise to food to medicine to, yes, supplements. And I've done a lot of research on what to take and why and for when, and am now just a believer that in 2024 and in culture of 2024 and how we're living, just the way that the toxicity has overcome our society in terms of toxins, parabens, phthalates, you know, glyphosate, et cetera, into our food source, our water source, et cetera, that now more than ever, more than 6-7 years ago, we need to be functionally supplementing every day and anti-oxidizing our bodies every day so that we're not being overloaded with this toxicity.
So what's one or two tips that you would recommend to people on how to do that? I want to talk more about Bond, but I'm sure that that plays into it. But what are one or two things that you found in your research that people can be doing to support a healthier body and mental state?
Number one is to be taking a high level of probiotics every day, and probiotics plus fiber. So foundationally, if you're going to start somewhere, start with your digestive tract. If you can get that to not be compromised and keep your body in a state of balance and calm, then the other systems in your body will end up sorting secondarily. So your hormones are tied to digestion, and your overall fertility processes are also tied to it, which means you should be considering how you feel in your gut day in and day out as one of the fundamentals to women's health.
So did you have that aha moment correlation between your personal experience and your challenges with your digestive system and fertility insofar as when you were creating Bond? Was that part of the reason why you created it that way with sort of a gut function in mind from the get-go?
Yeah. So the products that we have for Bond all have a foundational element of immune and digestive support, meaning that we want you to balance those systems before you're thinking about your egg quality, before you're thinking about your hormone levels, because they're so important. I actually wrote a white paper on it too, pulling all of the research together, just back to front on why having probiotics and the strength of your gut matters. So that's really, to me, the fundamental. Would I say I had it in 2017? No, I would say it wasn't until years later that I really realized that the levels of the gut play into reproductive health. But in 2017, when I was only doing 100 net carbs a day as the fertility diet, you kind of get into a similar state with your body through that sort of eating.
Interesting. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about Bond. I'd love to hear more. So What was the inspiration behind Bond, the product and the name?
The name is so special to me. Okay, so the name is, it signifies the bonds we want to have in this lifetime, right? So whether that is just the bond with yourself and your own reproductive system, the balance you drive into your own body, or the bonds you want to create, or the bond with your partner and, you know, future bonds. So I really wanted this brand to not feel medicinal, but to feel like something women could feel proud of taking, even if they are on the path of trying to conceive and having trouble. But that's really how the name Bond came to be. And it was through my co-founder, Mar, who actually came up with it. So I'll forever love her for that. And then really the idea behind the brand is to have a brand out there that supports the reproductive system for a multitude of women, no matter what journey they're on. So today we've obviously spoken a lot about my journey, which is centered around infertility and trying to conceive. Bond has a wonderful collection of conception products and products to support on that. But what we're really trying to do is to teach women and to educate that the care that you take for your hormones and your immune system and your digestive system in the years prior to conception, in the years prior to never conceiving, if that's not the path for you, but the way that you treat those systems in your body is ultimately going to impact your reproductive system in a good or bad way. And being able to do that care when you're 22, when you're 25, and keep your body in that state of balance will give you better chances of conception should you find yourself there, and should be something that is of a consideration and something that you think about now, even if you're not trying to conceive.
And what would you say to the person who didn't know that they should have done prep work beyond the, oh, you should take your prenatal for 6 months or whatever the standard is? I feel like it's constantly changing, but roughly 6 months before you try to conceive.
Do you know why they say that, by the way?
I actually have no idea. I mean, to prep your body, I know on a cellular level that things regenerate, but why do they say that?
So the number one ingredient in a prenatal is methylfolate or vitamin B9. Most women carry a deficiency of methylfolate. Again, we live in a world of 2024 where there are several things bringing us down on a daily basis, but most women are living in a deficiency. If you go and get pregnant accidentally while you're in a deficiency, the neural tube defects of your baby are so great. And the lack of folate is what would trigger those neural tube defects. And it's pretty early on in the pregnancy, right? So that's why everyone recommends a prenatal so far out, because I guess really coming back to the government, they want to make sure that you have folate in your system in the off chance that you do get pregnant.
What is your opinion on the folate versus folic acid debate?
Oh, to me, it's not a debate. I'm a methylfolate believer. All of our products are sourced with methylated vitamins. So methylated folate and then methylated B12. There's a small percentage of people that can't tolerate methylated vitamins, but it's small and you would know it. And most people actually can't tolerate folic acid, especially if they have what is the MTHFR genetic mutation, which causes homocysteine in their body to almost a level of inability to process folate and other methylated vitamins. So their levels are literally bottoming out. So I'm not a proponent of folic acid. It's the non-good form to me that would potentially put you in a worse place if you didn't know such things about yourself, which most people don't.
Thank you for sharing that. And As someone who is very interested in nutrition and knows a lot of people who have far more expertise than I have, it seems like folate is always the clear winner. But I am always amused when I see medical professionals really pushing folic acid, which does happen. And we talked a little bit about staying in sort of our areas of expertise. I find it interesting that there are so many doctors that are relied upon to give nutritional advice when in fact, and the last study I saw was a few years ago because I did my courses back in 2016, 17 to become a health coach. And during that time, I think that the average was about 25% of US medical schools actually offered nutritional programs. And of those programs, the average amount of time that medical students spent on nutrition was roughly 16 hours overall.
That's really low.
It's very low. So it's really on the physician to seek additional interest and to take whatever time that they don't have to try to research and be on top of things. So I think it's also very almost inappropriate for people to think that doctors should have that level of knowledge about nutrition. So I always appreciated later on when I worked with doctors that said, you know, I know a lot about nutrition. I know enough to make me dangerous, but here's this expert that I work with, this registered dietitian, and this person is awesome and can, you know, keep you up to date on all the latest and greatest studies, right? Because who has the time to sift through all of those things? So I'm always fascinated by that. And so to that end, you pursued nutrition, right, to help you along your journey. And now you're giving that back through Bond. When was that moment when you and your business partner said, I need to do this. I have to create this supplement. And why?
I've always said, my role in this life is to be the perfect number two, like to support someone else's vision. What ended up happening was I had my daughter in my arms and she was born, and I just looked at her and felt like I had to help other people, that I wasn't just here to help myself get my kids here, but I'm also here to help other people with their health and wellness. And it was kind of an epiphany. So I reached out to this amazing doctor and researcher in Detroit. His name is Dr. Gilmore, and he's one of the pioneers in everything reproductive immunology based. And just introduced myself, and he said, come out here. I am doing this speaker series where people are coming in and sharing their stories. And, you know, we're researchers. We don't see people in real life who actually go through all these things that we research for years and years and years. So I drove myself to Detroit, like decided I have the confidence to do it, drove myself to Detroit, went and spoke to all of those researchers for an hour. It was so eye-opening. He took me through his lab, talked to me for hours one-on-one about everything he had learned. And overall, I just felt like, wow, I'm not the only one that cares about this. Other people do too, but the people that do care are in research, they're not in a doctor's office, and it's coming through too slow to the regular public, where I want to kind of cut the timeline by hopefully, like, gosh, I see it as like 10 years of catching people up on all of this research and supplement for this and an ingredient and vitamin for that and a micro RNA expression that might need just a little extra tryptophan, like all of these things I've learned. And he really inspired me to put myself out in the community and devote the rest of my life to this. So that was it.
It's interesting that you said something about it takes about 10 years for the information to distill to the public. And I have read in papers that on average, the research that is found typically takes 10 to 15 years to make it to the doctor's office to then distill to the public. So you've made this your life's work now, and that's beautiful. So what do you wish that every woman knew about fertility and hormone health and how to take care of themselves?
The one thing I want you all to walk away with is that reproductive success isn't just in your reproductive system, and you need to think about it as your full body being in balance in order for you to have the best chances of fertility, whether that is in your picture or not. And that includes your hormones, your immune system, and your digestive systems working in balance and in a repeated balance type of system where your body's not modulating out of what's normal like mine did in order to cause problems that I can't reverse now. So that is what I hope you can all take away. I would say if I got one secondary takeaway, it would be that your body's immune system changes day over day over day once you get pregnant. You should be cautious and help follow your body through those changes and seek to understand more about how your immune system works within your reproductive system.
Karen, thank you so very much. Do you have any other parting words for our guests before we wrap up?
I have one more thought for guests, which is the other major thing that I learned and all this self-discovery for myself is that other people don't have your answers. You have your answers, and you can use other people to get those answers for you. Like, you can lean into a doctor, you can lean into a nutritionist, you could lean into 20, but at the end of the day, once you wake up and realize that it's really you that needs to decide what's best for you, it'll become a lot easier on your path.
Beautiful. Thank you for those words of wisdom. Karen, it has been my absolute pleasure to have you as a guest today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the All Over Again podcast. I hope that you learned something from today's episode. If you enjoyed this, please leave a 5-star review about All Over Again on Apple Podcasts. Please also let me know what spoke to you about the episode on our social media channels @AllOverAgainPodcast. I can't wait to hear from you.